show with myself, your host, John Justice, along with producer Robbie here on Twin Cities News Talk. We'll be talking with Representative Tom Emmer. He's going to weigh in on Farm Fest. We have a lot of Farm Fest audio to play for you coming up in a few minutes. Also, another friend of the show, Friday. Tomorrow is Friday, right?
Oh, thankfully. Yes! Yes! And there's a, well, it's not going to make the rundown, but I will say this. There's a huge concert at which they mentioned in our meeting, in our staff meeting earlier this week, that sold out once, got canceled due to COVID, and now sold out again. That'll be Kenny Chesney and some other supporting acts. I think Dan and Shay and Old Dominion.
Is that this weekend?
Yeah.
Are you going?
Friday night at US Bank Stadium. Tomorrow night, I'm looking at it.
Yeah, you're looking at it?
I'm looking at it. I mean, it's right here.
I have one Kenny Chesney song in one of my playlists.
Okay.
Somewhere with you.
Okay.
Courtesy of my father, actually. My father played it for me one day. He got into the country music for all. I may still be. Yeah. And I was like, ooh, I like that song.
That's a pretty popular song, yeah. But it's going to be a big summer feel at US Bank Stadium before the Vikings hit the field. So.
Not enough to get me out of the house.
It's fair.
But for those that want to go, I'm sure it'll be very exciting.
Mm-hmm.
Also, as I mentioned on tomorrow's show, another friend of the show Friday, two guests coming in tomorrow. And you can find out who they are at 7 o'clock when they arrive.
And I don't even know, so.
You're right, I haven't told you yet, have I?
Nope. Second week in a row. We're two for two.
This is the first time this duo has been together on the show, and they have been wanting to come together on the show.
And I've met both of them so far?
Okay. Pretty sure.
But I definitely know who both of them are.
Okay. Right. They're frequent guests on the show, I believe have never appeared together, and this will be the first time tomorrow starting at 7 o'clock.
Captain and Tennille situation.
Really quick, I want to double back to last hour. I have an article here from MinnPost that I was using as a reference when we had Attorney General candidate Doug Wardlow on right around 7:20. So if you missed it, be sure to go back and listen to the 7 o'clock hour podcast on the iHeartRadio app. From MinnPost, though, the headline went as follows. Anti-abortion MAGA fan Wardlow looks to spoil AG primary for GOP Schultz. State GOP officials are angry Wardlow is spoiling what had been an otherwise successful effort to have convention delegates, not primary voters, determine the party's general election candidate. Those delegates endorsed Jim Schultz. We had Doug Wardlow on. He asked to come on the show, so we had him on for a few minutes and talking about his campaign. He's addressed the issue of not abiding by the endorsement several times, so we just kind of stuck to the current topics at hand. We do have a few talkbacks via the iHeartRadio app that wanted to chime in on Doug Wardlow's visit here on the show.
Hey, guys, great show. Just wondering, though, why Jim Schultz, who's the Republican-endorsed candidate for attorney general, was barely mentioned during the other candidate, Doug Wardlow's recent appearance today. Just wondering if there's some sort of rift in the party or why he's not being given fair airtime. Thanks again.
It's really important for people to understand that what the scenario Doug just laid out about overriding Doe versus Gomez, he has zero authority to do as attorney general. It is the Supreme Court that made the decision. Only the Minnesota Supreme Court can undo this decision, or it can be brought to the people via a constitutional amendment. But there is zero that the attorney general can do, and people need to know that Doug is misleading them.
I appreciate the talkbacks and the clarity on these issues. And as I mentioned during the interview with Doug Wardlow, you know, primary voters are going to decide next week who they want, despite the controversies that surround this particular race. To the first talkbacker that I want to address, because I think Rob Dorr, who was the second talkback there, was specific enough in what he laid out. To the first talkbacker, we did mention Schultz in the interview. Typically, the way I operate is when I have a candidate on, I let them kind of decide how they want to go and address the opposition. And Doug Wardlow had mentioned Schultz a few times, and Jim Schultz is certainly welcome to come on the show anytime between now and primary day. Doug Wardlow had just reached out to me and asked if there was time on the show this morning, and so we gave it to him. Again, if you missed the interview and want to decide for yourself how you feel and who you want to vote for, be sure to listen to the 7 o'clock hour right around 7:20 in the conversation that I had with Doug Wardlow on the iHeartRadio app via the podcast. All right, let's turn our attention over to Farm Fest. First, we'll start here before we dive into the actual debate that took place. A little bit of controversy, however you want to call it, surrounding Governor Tim Walz didn't seem like he was walking into friendly territory yesterday before he went toe-to-toe with Dr. Scott Jensen during the gubernatorial debate. We'll start here. So a farmer and retired sheriff had walked up, and Rebecca Brannon gets credit for this, independent photojournalist, a friend of the show and frequent guest. I grabbed, actually, all of these clips come from her Twitter feed. So hat tip to Rebecca for grabbing these clips. The story that I have here in front of me comes from Alpha News. Governor Tim Walz was whisked away by staff after a voter confronted him Wednesday about his handling of the George Floyd riots. So let me play you the audio here. And again, it's a little difficult to hear, so I'll recap a bit of what was said. But here, this was, I have two clips. So I had the farmer, retired sheriff. This is the second clip. The first clip comes from an individual asking Walz about what happened in the Twin Cities and why the police station burnt to the ground and we didn't send individuals in.
Police station burned to the ground and not send troops in there to stop.
Governor, we've got some folks waiting for us up at Romeo, so we should head up there.
You can't answer your question.
If you use the hashtag TCNT on Twitter, you can see the actual exchange. But what the individual said was, and I apologize, it's a little hard to hear. The man was standing in front of Governor Tim Walz, and he said, why would you let a police station burn to the ground and not send in the troops? And this was during the annual Farm Fest gathering in southern Minnesota. Again, according to video captured by independent photojournalist Rebecca Brannon. Now, Walz, in the clip, briefly began to try to answer the question, but then was suddenly cut off by a member who said, we've got some folks waiting for us, we should get up there. The governor then took a picture with a supporter before walking away. So just again, to provide you the context, I'll play you the first part of it. You're going to hear the guy, why would you let a police station burn to the ground and not send in the troops? And Walz tries to start answering, but then one of his handlers comes up and cuts him off. Oh, we've got some folks waiting for us.
Police station burned to the ground and not send troops in there to stop.
Governor, we've got some folks waiting for us up at Romeo, so we should.
What are you afraid of? It's not an unfair question. And Walz was even about to answer it. What's the fear here? And again, it must be that the expectation is that the individual that was asking Walz this wasn't going to vote for him. That's the only assumption I can make, is that they're assuming and the handlers are assuming that rather than allow Walz to answer a very legitimate question, could follow it up with why do you, you know, refer to the National Guard as, you know, cooks and dishwashers, right? But be that as it may, the only thing I can assume is that they're assuming that this person's not going to vote for Walz. But what if he was? And what good did it bring you here? What good did it give you to have this out there? It's being filmed. What are they so afraid of? Now, there was another moment where Walz actually gets into a one-on-one with this, but then finds the first opportunity to ditch out of the conversation. This is the farmer and retired sheriff talking with Governor Walz and explaining how, in his mind, Walz wiped out his 30-year-old farm.
Agencies wiped out my 30-year-old farm.
Which agency?
The DNR has wiped out my 30-year-old.
What did they do?
I've got a healthy white-tailed deer farm. I don't have disease. I don't have any disease.
Board of Animal Health.
No, it's the DNR. It's the DNR, and they're destroying my industry. I worked 30 years in law enforcement. I'm a retired sheriff. I've followed the rule of law, and the Minnesota DNR does a blanket-wide shutdown of any deer movement. I have an entertainment business.
Yeah, we did.
And I can't fulfill contracts. I have a closed herd. I have a closed herd. I haven't brought a new animal on my farm in 15 years. I'm USDA certified. I call Bob Meyer, and I say, Bob, I'm going to miss out on a $25,000 contract. Sorry, Steve, you're shut down for 30 days. I need to leave on the 28th day of a ban. Nope, you're shut down. My kids are running from my farm, and it's under. I'm sorry, your DNR is hostile.
Well, these policies have been in place.
I would like to, this is the first time I've ever been able to talk to you.
What's your suggestion around CWD?
The suggestion is let the USDA and the Minnesota Board of Animal Health do their job instead of a blanket statewide shutdown of clean, healthy industries. When we have a TB outbreak in cows, what do? We shut down the TB-infected cow herd and anybody that bought and sold to.
We're trying to get more clarification.
But what's happened is I have a clean herd, and my business has been destroyed. My boys.
What about these folks you've got?
But what about? Let me ask you a question. Then I worked in law enforcement. If a priest molests a young boy, the law enforcement.
I'm not going to that hypothetical.
We don't shut down every Catholic church. We don't shut down every Catholic church. We go after the offenders.
That's a different analogy.
Shake that man's hand. This is Knuckles, my grandson. Came up before.
Look, I was kind of giving Walls a little bit of credit there. As he was actually engaging with this individual, clearly frustrated over what the DNR had done to his farm. Wiping out his 30-year-old farm. Blanket policies. And the moment that Walls saw an opportunity to pitch off the conversation, he did. What is he afraid of? Well, I know what he's afraid of. He's afraid of losing this election. That's why he has handlers more than happy to whisk him away when he's asked a legitimate question of why he let the city burn for 3 days. The Minnesota Senate report, by the way, that was released in October 2020, just to double back to the other comment, and then we'll play you some of the clips from the actual debate that took place yesterday between Walls and Jensen. The Minnesota Senate report talked about and described the governor's hesitation in activating the National Guard, having monitored social media of other electeds today. We need to be very careful with messaging like this as not to be tone deaf or dismissive or put property above people, the governor's office advised in a message sent to staff during the riots. The report suggested a philosophical conflict that caused Walls and local leaders to think twice before confronting ideological allies. The Minnesota Governor Tim Walls and elected local leaders identified with the causes promoted by the demonstrators, causing them to lose sight of their responsibility to protect the public from criminal acts committed during the riots, it reads. Quoting Walls as saying that an armed presence on the ground could be seen as a catalyst. The Minnesota National Guard was not fully mobilized until 4 days after the first building was burned. It was all politically motivated. And the comment here is spot on. Minnesota Governor Tim Walz and elected local leaders identified with the causes promoted by the demonstrators, causing them to lose sight of their responsibility. They figured those are individuals and the people that are going to be sympathetic with those that are causing damage to private property that had absolutely nothing to do with the whole reason why they were allegedly out there protesting. They need those votes at the behest of the city of Minneapolis. They let it burn because it was politically advantageous for them to do so, which is why, again, Walls doesn't get a chance to answer that question when he's actually asked it in public. In the meantime, Governor Tim Walz and Dr. Scott Jensen squared off in their first debate of the campaign season at FarmFest. In front of one of FarmFest's largest crowds in years, Walls and Jensen sparred over the government's response to COVID-19, the role of state government in reducing inflation, and the nuances of agricultural policy. If you want to call in and comment, 651-989-5855. Use the talkback function on the iHeartRadio app. We'll play those coming back. But let's get into some of the clips that we have from yesterday's debate, starting off with Governor Walls talking about the government is needed, especially when handling epidemics and pandemics.
And we talked about biosecurity. We talked about some of the pathogens that are out there. We talked about an intentional terrorist attack on our food system that could disable this country. And what we were able to do is when we saw the bird flu epidemic, highly pathogenic avian influenza, when we saw it in 2015, it burned like wildfire. It burned through and we ended up destroying about 9 million animals. It impacted many, about 115 of our growers in that case. We learned learned from that. We put in the biosecurity. We worked together. The work that Tom Peterson and his team did with our livestock producers was absolutely phenomenal. When an even more contagious influenza came this time, transmitted by wild waterfowl, that became very dangerous because there's no way to track that down. We contained that to about 80 facilities. We contained it to about 3 million birds, and we repopulated at a much quicker rate. This is about whether it's the pandemic or whether it's biosecurity around pathogens in our livestock industry. It's about having a plan. It's about working together. It's about executing. And trust me on this. You need government when something this big happens. And the collaboration and coordination that our agencies did saved the birds' lives, saved the livelihood, and put Minnesota back on the map as the number one turkey producer. And we need to stay in that place and make sure this doesn't happen with pork. We're ready.
When he was talking about number one turkey producer, was he referring to himself? Wish I had the Waka Waka on the ready. By the way, that clip, a nice sort of glossing over the fact that we were completely unprepared for COVID. This was something that I remember Drew had focused on really, really early on, and rightfully so, when the pandemic started, that we should have been and could have been way more prepared than we were when COVID struck. That's not to say that you know, like, how COVID was going to play out or what we were dealing with, but that is to say, in terms of measures and what we need to be done in the case of dealing with something like COVID, we had every opportunity to go and prepare ourselves for that, and we never did. So it's nice of Wallace to go and point out all these other things they did about kind of not addressing, and perhaps he did during the debate. I only have a few clips here. The fact that we were wholly unprepared when we dealt with COVID. All right, we have a lot more to get to with regard to FarmFest yesterday, including the clip we'll get to next of Jensen challenging Walls on stating that the future is biofuels.
And John, just one more thing. We also have, after the break, we have the gentleman who actually asked Walls the question at FarmFest, so he wanted to talk to you for a couple minutes about what he had to say to Governor Walls.
We'll get to that coming up. Your talkbacks and your phone calls as well here on Twin Cities News.
Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130 and 103.5 FM.
Busy Thursday morning here on Twin Cities News Talk. We have a lot more audio to play from yesterday's FarmFest gubernatorial debate. We also played a couple of clips. All of these I pulled from Rebecca Brandon, independent photojournalist, friend of the show. So thanks to her and Alpha News for compiling these clips from this big event that that took place. We played a couple of clips beyond the actual debate. One of them of a farmer, retired sheriff, talking to Governor Walls about how his 30-year-old farm got wiped out. We actually have him on hold, I believe, so we're going to speak with him here in just a moment. Also played the clip of Walls not answering the question of an individual who simply just wanted to know, hey, why would you let the police station burn to the ground and not send in the troops? Walls started to kind of respond, and immediately his handler swooped in to scurry him off, and we have some talkbacks.
Every public event between now and the election, Republicans ask Walls why he let the police station burn down, and why didn't he send in the guards? That should be asked at every public event between now and the election.
I saw the clip. He didn't have time to answer the question, but he sure had time to take a photo with someone else. Such a coward.
His staff didn't just swoop in. He was asked a question, and he was completely deer in the headlights, like he had no comprehension whatsoever. Then his staff grabbed him and tried to yank him away so he didn't have to answer the difficult question. And some woman who appeared to be a poser in the audience grabbed a picture with him. Completely unprofessional and horrible, and I would not want him to represent me.
But, you know, it's interesting. Walls is such a fascinating political creature to me. It really is. In simplest terms, I think the easiest answer to all of this is it's sort of the DFL shielding that politicians have in this state. Just because the DFL has so much support here that, You know, opposition is always tough against them. So they're allowed to go and get away with this. I hope it doesn't fly. I hope that the more exposure that is put on this, that people understand kind of what a fraud he is and what a coward he is. We also played this clip, and I'll play you just a portion of it briefly again.
Agencies wiped out my 30-year-old farm. Your
which agency?
The DNR has wiped out my 30-year-old.
What did they do?
I've got a healthy white-tailed deer farm. I don't have disease. I don't have any disease.
Board of Animal Health.
No, it's the DNR. It's the DNR, and they're destroying my industry.
The clip went on for another minute 20 until the individual talking, the farmer and retired sheriff talking to Walz, tried to present a very relevant analogy to which Walz used that to pitch off of the conversation. And I believe we have the individual who was talking to Walz in that clip on the phone, Steve in Lake Brunson. Good morning, sir. Thank you so much for calling in this morning.
Hey, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
So talk a little bit about your background. What led you to that moment with your conversation with Governor Tim Walz at FarmFest?
Sure. I got into law enforcement. I did a 30-year career, retired as sheriff, defended the Constitution, defended victims, had a good career, and I built a farm at the same time. Walz has destroyed my farm. My kids want nothing to do with it. It's a political hotbed. I've got 160 animals on my farm. It's a good, productive business that I built with my own hands. And I thought my kid could take over my farm. And Walz, he skirt-tailed the questions. He wants to blame the Board of Animal Health. He wants to blame the legislature. The fact is, he has weaponized the Minnesota DNR to attack agriculture on many, many fronts. I went down there with the intention of confronting him. You can't get a hold of the guy. He doesn't want to answer any questions. I have a clean, healthy farm. There's never an example of a disease that maybe hits pigs or cows or turkeys where they shut down an entire industry. What they do, if you have bird flu, they go to the infected farm and they help them out. They don't shut down a farm 300 miles away from a disease and say, you can't conduct business, forfeit all your paychecks. We're shutting you down, not once, not twice, but three times. Forfeit all your contracts, destroy all relationships with the people you do business with, by being unable to fulfill your contracts, you're just done. We don't fight disease that way. We don't in law enforcement. We don't go after innocent people. We go after offenders. And as soon as I made that analogy, that in law enforcement, if you have somebody that does something wrong, you go after the bad guy.
Yeah.
You don't attack industry. He wants to walk away. He doesn't want to answer the questions.
Steve, help educate me a little bit, just because I'm new to this, don't know much about farming, how the DNR works, and so I'm going to appeal to your expertise to sort of help educate me on this particular topic. Was there a change in policy that took place under Walz that led to what happened to you? Why is this specifically, in your opinion, on Governor Tim Walz, what you ended up having to deal with?
Yeah, so it's not just my industry. I built a deer farm. It's productive. But I had a get-together, a roundtable with Scott Jensen. I brought 30 different farmers into the room. What happens is, when we get a liberal Walz and Keith Ellison, they weaponize the state enforcement agency to go out, and they're at their disposal. They weaponize them. There's not an elected sheriff above the DNR, and these poor people have to listen to a liberal agenda. So they send state officers out to a 70-year-old farmer, and they attack him on a wetland violation. They drop a new map, and they extort money from him. And they're pursuing a green agenda. And it's too bad. There's good officers in the DNR, but they can't do anything. And they have to follow their orders. And so at the roundtable we had farmers complaining about, one guy says, I have 21 irrigation heads. I need to irrigate my crops. It takes 3 years to get a permit to turn on my wellhead. When I can't irrigate, my crops don't grow. But you can't get a permit through the Minnesota DNR. We had another livestock producer there. He said, we had an agreement that when we're in a drought or stressful times, we can rent state land and put our cattle out there to graze. It benefits the state land, and we can put our cows on fresh grass. But under Walz, we can't even rent that state land. It's off limits. We haven't been able to do it under him. They've been reeling it in. They're going out and burning state land, doing controlled burns, instead of letting these livestock producers have this fresh pasture for their cows. We're heading into a worldwide drought. We're heading into a worldwide food shortage. And Walz is resisting and obstructing farmers at every front.
Have these changes happened under Walz? Is that when the change took place, once Walz took office? Or
my farm's been under attack for 4 years. He's weaponized the DNR. And like I said, when we have a turkey disease, they deal with the infected farm. But in deer, Walz says, well, you know, we got a deer. On the video, he says, what do we do about the infected farms? Well, you deal with a farm who gets a disease. You go deal with that farm specifically. But you don't shut someone down up by the Canadian border who's 300 miles away. But on the interview, Walz says, what do we do with the infected farms? What do we do? Well, how about everybody else gets to conduct business? This is America.
Yeah.
Let us conduct business when we can prove that we have a clean, healthy farm. It's not what he does. He shuts everybody down, broad sweeping motion across the state, and he's unapologetic. It's just what he's going to do.
What's the future of your farm at this point in time?
I have a prosperous business, but understand, like, I do sports shows. So I've been down to the Twin Cities numerous times with live tame trophy bucks. I'm entertainment at a big sports show. I go to sports shows all over the upper Midwest. I've been doing this since 1997. But when the DNR says, hey, Steve, you can't conduct business for 30 days, and I happen to be scheduled to be at a sports show with 40,000 people, I've lost credibility. They've printed 40,000 brochures that I'll be there. They've been on Facebook, TV. They've spent their advertising budget that I will be there with my live white-tailed deer display. And now I don't have credibility. So they say, well, you're free to travel now, Steve. Right now there's no ban in place. Now you can go. But they've destroyed my credibility on my ability to fulfill my contracts. And they know what they're doing. They're very clever. And they just keep hit. And that's what they've been doing. They've been hitting agriculture, but it's not just deer farms. They've been hitting cattle producers. They've been hitting people who grow grain. We had 30 people at a roundtable discussion that were livid, and I invited Scott Jensen, and I had three state representatives. I had Jim Schultz there, a fantastic man running for attorney general, and they understand what these farmers are dealing with. Walz says he's pro-agriculture. I can get you 30 farmers from every walk of life who will tell you that's not the case.
How long have you been in the state for, Steve?
How long have I been what?
In the state.
I was born here.
I
decided I love Minnesota. I'm going to live here, build a farm, raise a family. I worked 30 years in law enforcement, respectfully, and I retire, and I'm attacked by Walz. My family farm's attacked. My boy's got a house on my farm that's half built. He got married. He said, I want to run this farm for the next 40 years. It's a turnkey operation. My kid told me the other day, I'm done on the farm. I'm scared of the politics. I can't take the stress. I'm done. His house is half finished. We're out a couple $100,000. That's not a big deal to anybody else, but it's big to me. It's my farm that I built. I've got these animals, and they've limited my ability to produce an income with a diverse livestock on marginal land.
Well, Steve, I can't thank you enough for calling in and sharing your insight. I have one last question for you, which is the reason why I asked how long you were in the state, because I feel like you've got, you know, while it's anecdotal, I feel like you have a perspective that you can provide here on the show. Your time following politics and elections, I know you talked about the other farmers who have been involved in your roundtables. Are you seeing a difference in attitude heading into this election cycle? Do you think that people are ready for a change? Maybe individuals that typically vote DFL but are as frustrated as you are. What's sort of your prediction heading into the elections later in the next few months?
Hey, you know what? I love law enforcement. I worked in law enforcement, and I just can't believe Walz has also destroyed the image of law enforcement. We need to support our law enforcement, and I have to think the people that vote Democrat are wise enough, and you can't lie to them over and over and over again.
Yeah.
We need law enforcement. I mean, we just have to have it. And so we've got a law enforcement academy up here in Thief River Falls. They said there's nobody applying. When you badmouth law enforcement long enough, kids stop applying. And when they stop applying, we don't have fresh recruits. And as a result, we're running at a deficit all across our state. We don't have people stepping up into law enforcement. What does the future hold? Walz and Biden have created a big mess by destroying the image of law enforcement. We need to respect our troops, respect our law enforcement, and somehow we got to build faith back up that law enforcement's a noble career, and it's good to go into.
Steve, again, thank you so much for the insight. It was great talking with you. Sorry you couldn't get an answer from Walls, but maybe you can get an answer come Election Day.
Thank you much. We're hoping for the best and praying for the best. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Yeah, that was just fantastic insight, you know. And you just, I cannot imagine the level of frustration and anger, legitimate anger, from individuals like Steve and other farmers out there dealing with these issues, where they've spent decades building up their livelihoods and creating something, right, and working hard and achieving something, just to have party politics come in and just strip it all away from them, down to where it actually affects, you know, family matters. 651-989-5855. Your talkback's on the way, and still a lot of audio to share from yesterday's debate between Walls and Jensen at Farm Fest. It's all coming up on Twin Cities News Talk.
Why do these frickin' farmers always complain? Trump gave him $27 billion. Now they're still complaining about everything. Get off your lazy ass, quit buying brand new $300,000 combines, and grow stuff.
Yeah! Just, you know, quit buying combines and grow stuff, guys. Just do that. Thank you for the talkback, regardless, 651-989-5855. We have some more talkbacks via the iHeartRadio app to share with you in just a moment, and we'll get to this audio from FarmFest yesterday. First off, let's go to the phones, and we will start with Eric in Bloomington. Good morning, Eric. Thanks for holding on. What's on your mind this morning?
I'm wondering, these next elections coming up, is it time for conservatives and Republicans to go on the offensive?
Offensive, like in what way?
Start attacking the Democrats, attacking their policies, attacking how they govern.
Okay.
And
well, I
do everything they can to show the people that their programs are killing the country.
Yeah. Well, I think that, and you know what, we actually have some audio for what it's worth, and thank you for the call. For one, let me say this. Yes, of course, it's time to go on the offensive. You have to go on the offensive, right, to expose how bad the other side's ideas are. You don't hear as much about it within your media, apart from shows like this, because it doesn't get covered. But I'd like to believe that there are plenty of candidates out there that are going on the offensive, even if you don't see it on the surface level. And like I said, we will play you the audio clips coming up here in a moment that demonstrate that as well from FarmFest. Let's go and talk with Susan. Good morning, Susan. Bloomington, what's on your mind this morning? Welcome to Twin Cities News Talk.
Well, it was interesting to hear the farmer about the weaponized DNR, because we're going through that. I own land on the south side of Lake Mille Lacs. And right before the last election, Governor Walz, after ignoring the pleas from the Mille Lacs County Board to meet on a subject about boundary issues between the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe and the landowners and the county, he ignored all meetings, went straight up to the reservation, and announced that he was recognizing 61,000 acres instead of 7,500 acres for the Mille Lacs Band without telling the residents, without doing anything. And then the highway signs went up saying that my land was now on a reservation. Now, this has gone through several courts, and I think we're going to the Supreme Court. I don't know all the specific details to speak on, but it's pretty scary. And the DNR has ruined the lake. They with all their slots and all the things they have to do, the citizens, the resorters are all losing money. And he gave away land without telling the residents or the county board. So this has been in court. I think we're on round three coming up here. So nobody knows if we can sell our land. Do we need permits for things? What? Nobody knows anything.
Susan, I cannot even. I made this comment a moment ago, but I'll just repeat myself. I can't imagine the frustration. I can't even fathom what that must feel like to be in the position that you're in. It has to be infuriating.
Well, yeah, we've owned the land 25 years. We've built up things. We remodeled 2 years ago. We're getting ready to retire and maybe move up there. Well, we don't know if we're going to keep it or sell it. And if we sell it, we're going to leave the state and go to a red state.
Susan, thank you for the phone call. I appreciate it, and good luck. And stay in touch, too. We'd love to hear further details about your story. I've heard my experience with this along the same lines has been with a lot of what we've talked about on the southern border and the ranchers that live along the southern border that have had these places for generations. And the government has just completely and utterly ignored them over the course of the past few decades and allowing their lands just to be trampled upon and destroyed by illegal aliens coming into the country. And it's only gotten worse under the Biden administration, as we've talked about so many times on the show. All right, we're going to get to some more phone calls here. I want to sneak in a few of these audio clips from the debate yesterday before we wrap up the show today. Jensen went and did challenge to the call we had a moment ago talking about going on the offensive. Dr. Scott Jensen did challenge Walls on stating that the future is biofuels.
Well, I have to confess, I'm confused. But I'm Norwegian, so I guess I'm entitled. If biofuels are the future of Minnesota, then why did Governor Walls hook our wagon to be a California copycat? Following the California rules, by 2025, 35% of the vehicles sold have to be electric vehicles, and right now we're less than 2%. So in 2-3 years, we got to go from 2% to 35%. And in 2009, Governor Walls, at a time, was in Congress, stood proudly next to Congressman Eric Paulson and called on the Minnesota legislature to remove the moratorium on nuclear power. So what is the future? Is it biofuels or is it electric cars? Why are we doing this to our economy with California carmen? When an F-150 electric vehicle pickup in January in Minnesota might have a range of less than 200 miles, why would we make you do that? Why would we tell auto dealers what they get to sell? Why would we follow California when the fact is they want to get rid of all internal combustion energies, including your lawnmower? I mean, if biofuels are the future of the, you know, the future, Governor Walls, then I would think we could back off the California car, and maybe you could stop that tomorrow. Wouldn't that be good? Thank you.
Ron in Knoxville. Good morning, sir. Welcome to Twin Cities News Talk. What's on your mind this morning?
Good morning. I'd like to make a comment regarding the caller who is saying that Trump spent $27 billion on farmer aid and
yes,
stuff like that. If you look at the analysis of the actual how much money and the bills that they spent, most of that money goes to social aid programs, i.e. you're going to give food stamps to people. It does not go to actual farmers. And then if you look at the farmers, basically the money actually also goes, the money that does go to farmers actually goes to things like basically loan guarantees and stuff like that, so that the farmers can actually do that. And the comment about spending $750,000 on a combine, well, you know, it's like, does the guy have a car to go to work? Or, you know, does the manufacturer have to buy a new piece of equipment to actually make the product that he needs?
Yeah.
If he doesn't have, the farmer doesn't have the combine, how the heck is he supposed to get the grain?
Yeah.
You know, how is he supposed to collect stuff? It makes no sense to me.
No, it doesn't. Yeah. And I think part of the problem was, I think that talkbacker, I thank you for the call, Ron, and the insight, too. I think that talkbacker might have been drunk. But that's just my assessment. I don't know. Sounded a little slurry. But then again, I sound slurry sometimes. Friend of the show, Matt, in Nisswa. What's on your mind this morning, sir?
Good morning, brother. So I just want to calmly and nicely educate the fellow that made the talk back about the combine. Yeah, combines are expensive, but firsthand experience, my stepdad has 190 acres. It literally costs him $25,000 for seed alone. So when they complain about prices, that's why. Last year, a gallon of weed control cost him $50. This year, it was $85.
No.
So that's why farmers are freaking out about this stuff. When it costs you that much money just to put your crop in, there's a problem.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Hey, Matt, thank you for the phone call, man. Always good to hear from you.
You too, brother.
All right, we got just enough time to squeak in a few more of these clips. Here is Walls talking climate change, programs and infrastructure, and some comments about what Jensen had said.
I think this is a group that knows the question about whether climate change is real has been answered. It's there. Minnesotans have been able to respond appropriately. This is a group of folks that are very resilient in this. Last night, we had a fairly heavy storms that went out, but there's a system in place. Our local emergency managers responded. We had 29,000 people without power by about the last hour or so. That's been reduced down. I think one of the things is that preparation that we can do. We need to be resiliency into our infrastructure, understanding that we can't have the flood wall up in Duluth wash out because we're seeing 500-year waves. But one of the things that we can do is we can invest in those programs that make a difference for folks in there. I think as Gary talked about the dairy program and making sure we were there to respond, I think we should consider we passed a great ag package, and I might add, those who wanted to kill the entire bill, we were able to pull out the ag package and the veterans package to get those things through. The things that were in there were the drought relief that was able to provide that relief. I think we need to think about permanent drought relief so that we don't get caught in the politics, so that they're able to provide the relief in the beginning. And then I think it's one of the things that you've heard. It's an all-of-the-above approach. Pretty much, and just to be clear, everything that Scott said about clean cars was pretty much not true. The fact of the matter is that we're having a broad approach to this, and our ag producers are going to be the ones, from sequestration of carbon to the ability to look at crops that are more resilient and regenerative agriculture on the land. Those are the things. This is going to be a hungry, hotter, more disrupted world, but we can start to do the things necessary that both insulate us from those things, making sure that our infrastructure is more secure, but we can also have programs in place to support our producers.
You know, I'm glad that Walz is at least taking a firm stance on his belief in global warming and climate change. Look, I'll give him credit for that. I don't agree with him. To coin a phrase that he used here, I pretty much think that he's a big liar. That being said, look, if that's the way you want to go, the voters can go and decide. That was a very, very full word salad there of just a lot of stuff that really isn't top of mind for the average voter, because Jensen followed up and then he kind of hit the nail on the head with this. Oh, and real quick, I love Walz's, everything that Jensen said about electric vehicles is pretty much not true. Pretty much not true. So is it...
You can't be almost pregnant.
You know what? Who's to say anymore, Robbie? Who's to say anymore?
Fair enough.
In the permitting processes, okay. And what you heard was that the producers want the government to tell you how to be compliant, and that the government will determine what the best practices are, because you evidently aren't up to the task of ideally and optimally stewarding the land that you live on and pass on to your children and your grandchildren. This just doesn't add up. I would say this, it's relatively simple. Let farmers farm, let miners mine, let teachers teach, and let government get the hell out of the way.
Yeah. I'll add in my own clapping with that. In the meantime, Governor Walz said he was proud of his 24 years in the National Guard.
Well, thank you, Scott. The one thing I do know is if we could have had Scott Jensen, apparently, as instead of Bud Grant, we would have won four Super Bowls. It's easy to guess after the fact. It's easy to say that these are the way things would have happened. It's easy to say there. And I just want to be very clear about this. Having served 24 years in the National Guard, that's a lot more experience than watching Top Gun Maverick and second-guessing where our men and women are putting themselves at risk. That's a lot bigger difference. And they perform historically, and they perform heroically.
This is the same group that he called when people asked him about sending the National Guard in to help stop and quell the unrest, putting it lightly, in Minnesota, where he said that it was, you know, we can't have a bunch of cooks and dishwashers, right? Yeah. And I'm just personally offended of him trying to take a stab at Top Gun Maverick. That's all. All right, one more here. A bit of Dr. Scott Jensen's closing statement from FarmFest.
We need more cops on the street. We need restorative justice. We need judges that will stick to the mandated minimums. This has got to stop, folks. There was a teenage boy killed last night right by the light rail downtown just before the Twins game started, over and over again. There is a poison of lawlessness that is bleeding out all across Minnesota, and we know this is a problem. We got to enforce the law. Got to. What I am most proud of during the COVID environment was that I stayed with my patients. I made house calls. We continued to have the conversations. Over 90% of my patients over the age of 70 with underlying medical conditions were vaccinated initially against COVID. I know what I stand for. And what I did not do was I did not flinch. I did not freeze. I didn't stop making decisions. Had I been in the governor's office, the National Guard would have been on the streets sooner. You and I together would recognize that the third precinct is a whole lot more than just a building. And you would not see the Christopher Columbus statue torn down by demonstrators because the governor sat with them. I will not freeze. I will make mistakes. I will make mistakes. You cannot be a family doctor without making mistakes. I will come up short, but I will keep trying. And in the end, when you talk to people that represent my departments, when you talk to my commissioners, you will not be talking to heavy-handed, mean-spirited leaders. You will see the MPCA and the DNR there to serve you. This has not been the way it's been going in Minnesota. We will do better. And lastly, I just want to tell you, when I was in the Senate, Governor Walz and I worked together to get an insulin bill passed. And it was an honor and a pleasure to work with him. He compromised and I compromised and we got it done, and I think we well served many diabetics.
Time.
So again, I thank Governor Walz for working with me on the insulin bill. Thank you.
You know, I hope we get more debates. That was great stuff. I'll be curious to see if Governor Tim Walz agrees to any more debates, but we will see. Right now, though, Robbie, recap the show, if you would, please.
Let's do it. In the 6 a.m. hour, we learned of some support for Speaker Pelosi's trip coming from an unexpected source. That would be Senator Ted Cruz. We also learned, after being made, Batgirl won't be seen by the public due to initially very poor reviews from early screenings. In the 7 a.m. hour, we had Lawyer Extraordinaire Jeff O'Brien on to discuss the latest abortion news from Minneapolis, and Doug Wardlow joined us to discuss his candidacy for AG in the state as well. The 8 a.m. hour, we learned all about Farm Fest and the first big moment between Governor Walz and Dr. Jensen in a debate that lasted over an hour with topics ranging from the state's agriculture to crime in the Twin Cities. Now, if you missed any of today's program, listen to the podcast at TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com or download it wherever you consume your audio. One more thing, I made a mistake. Kenny Chesney is Saturday night, not tomorrow night. We've had people call, oh my God, is he playing two nights? No, Saturday night. I screwed up. Sorry. I may be there.
All right, tomorrow, friend of the show Friday, once again, you'll find out which guests they are when they arrive in studio at 7 o'clock. Representative Tom Emmer, right at 8 o'clock. Jim Schultz, AG candidate, will be joining us at 8:20 tomorrow morning. So be listening for that as well. We got a busy week heading into the primary, too. We'll give you some previews. We have a lot of guests lined up for next week. Until then, I hope you have a fantastic day. Get out and enjoy the weather. Head on over to Good Feet in Burnsville. Get yourself some arch supports. We're back tomorrow, 6:05, with your overnight talkbacks. If you listen on the iHeartRadio after the podcast, leave us a talkback. We'll play it when the show starts.
See you Friday.